let's go ahead and get started, I guess. My name is Lauren. I'll be chairing the session. This is 354, 18 months on the periphery, the experience of sister missionaries. We are happy to hear from Krista Meekum and Tamara Taysom. Krista is a returned missionary with an MS in education from the University of Utah and a public school teacher who currently serves as the Young Women's President in her West Georgia ward. And Tamara is a returned missionary with an MS in education from Indiana University. A public school teacher, she currently serves as a gospel doctrine teacher in her Salt Lake City ward and is president of Sunstone Student Chapter at the University of Utah. And we're thrilled to hear from both of them, and we'll have Q&A at the end, so save your questions until then. Thank you.
Get started.
Yeah.
Okay, like she said, I'm the Young Women's President, and I just got back from girls' camp, so I'm really worried it won't make sense. In fact, I had a friend just call me yesterday, our friend here, about what time to come, and I said, it starts at 2, so I'll need to pick you up at 2:30. And I'm not nervous. I just said to somebody asked me how girls' camp was, and I said, it was so fun tattooing. And we didn't tattoo. We canoed. So the girls don't have tattoos, CTR tattoos or anything. So I'm just really tired. So if I don't make sense, just let me know, or I might just stop and let Tamara take over because I'm very sleepified. But while I was at camp, I had this experience, and Tamara just heard this story, but I was thinking about the differences, kind of the different needs of just women and men in general, and maybe sister missionaries and elders, but just kind of just the different genders in general. We went on a hike, and they put a priesthood leader at the front of the hike, and he was kind of, you know, go-getter and go fast, and he went too fast for these girls. The hike was very hard. In fact, one of our leaders runs marathons, and she was struggling. And it almost seemed like he just wanted to prove that, you know, I'm great, I can do this. And it wasn't his camp, it wasn't about him. And he just kept going and kept going and kept going, and they had 150 girls on this hike, and all of a sudden, little by little, they kind of separated. And at one point, I found myself alone, and it was hard, and my legs were wobbling, and I was barely making it. And there were a few times where he said, oh, this isn't so bad, I'm a mountain bike. And I just wanted to say, who invited you? This is for these girls, and you've got 150 girls, and some of them are healthy, and some of them aren't. And some of them work out, just all different kinds of needs. And at one point, we came across a girl that was by herself, and that's not very safe at all. She's a diabetic, and she was feeling very shaky, so we sat her down, and she checked her blood sugar, and it was at 40. So with good reason, she was feeling a little bit shaky. So we gave her something to eat, and we kind of got stranded on the mountain until the blood sugar could go up. But as I was thinking about that, and I was getting really irritated, wondering why, I understand why they wanted a priest to lead her there, but I was wondering why he had to be the leader, why that they thought that he was any better than any of the young women leaders to lead these girls. And I just kind of thought about the difference between women and men and just the different needs. And it's kind of like that with sister missionaries. Sister missionaries do a good job, but they have definitely different needs. So my experience with sister missionaries goes back to when I was a young woman myself. And I remember some sister missionaries spoke in church. And then from there, from sacrament meeting, I went to young women, and I remember my young women's leader saying, oh, can you believe how cute those sister missionaries are? It's not like a thing of the past. And I didn't understand what that meant, just the surprise of them being cute. And, you know, kind of, I've learned now as I'm older that idea of you're cute, you get married, you're not cute, you go on a mission. And it's not like that at all. So it's interesting to deal with that idea. So my story is, when I was 21, there were a lot of cute girls, actually, very cute, my roommates in college and different friends that had been on missions, and I started thinking that maybe I needed to go just because everybody was doing it. And it just didn't feel right, and I was glad because I could continue with school. And then at 23, almost 24, that's kind of when it hit me that it was something that I needed to do for me. Which was a very hard thing because I didn't want to go where 19-year-old boys were at. I had already graduated from college, and I didn't want to have that experience. And I was hoping that that feeling would go away. I went to the doctor, I went to the dentist, filled out the paperwork, hoping that it would kind of just be done. That I could just like say, see, I'm obedient, and then I would get that feeling that, don't do it. Rip your papers up and don't do it. But it never came, and so I went to the MTC. And that was a struggle in itself, just because not only was I a sister missionary, but I was 24 at the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm 24 with a bunch of young 19-year-olds who thought that they were something special, who were constantly reminding me that by the time they were 24 that they would be married, and kind of that idea of why don't you go home and get married. That was really tough. And I had a college degree and they just barely went out of high school. But I did my time, and I went on a Spanish-speaking mission, and so, of course, I had a longer time in the MTC. And I remember an elder pulling me aside the day before we left. We were all going to Chile, and the day before we left, he pulled me aside, and he told me that when he first met me, he didn't like me, and he had no reason not to like me, only that he just was irritated. He didn't like sister missionaries. He thought they had no right being there, and he was irritated with my very presence, thinking that I should just go home and get married. And then through our time of our 9 weeks together, and it was pretty much, you know, you're in class, you go eat, you're back in class, you go eat, you're back in class, you go to bed. And so you spend a lot of time together. And he told me that he was on a mission because he was commanded to be on a mission. And that was why it irritated him that I was there. But he said that having a sister there with a different presence was actually something that changed the attitudes in the elders in our district. And he said, I have come to learn that you were invited to go on a mission, and that makes you more special than me because you got an invitation to come. I was commanded to come. And I really liked that attitude of, you know, like, hey, you're as good as me, and you can do this too. And I liked that he got that attitude before he got out in the field, instead of him thinking that he was just, you know, the only one that was supposed to be there. So then I get on the long flight and, you know, sleep deprived again, and we finally make it to Chile. And our mission president picked us up, and we had quite a few sister missionaries at the time. And he was so excited that we had so many American sister missionaries because we could teach reverence at church. And I thought that was really interesting because I didn't ever see that. I wasn't trained in the MTC. I wasn't trained to teach reverence, and I never considered that being my responsibility. Of course, you know, you're going to somewhere where the church is, it's newer, and so there are different things that, you know, especially if you've been a member for a long time, there are things that you can teach them about how the church functions. But that was an interesting thing to hear, that kind of that's what he thought I was there for, to teach the little kids, and I was there to preach just like the elders were. So I thought that was really interesting that he would throw that at us instead of at everyone, because I think Oslo men can be an example of reverence. They should be being as reverent as women. Then from there, we went to the mission home, and I had an interview, my first interview with my mission president. And I've always been towards the heavier side, and I've always had body image issues, and so I'm very, very sensitive about that. And so my first interview, that's basically what my president asked me, was asked me about that, about my knees, and about
your what?
My knees.
Your knees?
My knees. Oh. Yeah. If I had problems walking, if I had problems with my knees, because he had mentioned that a lot of sister missionaries had problems with their knees, and I saw afterwards that people that have knee problems have knee problems. It's not gender-based. And that was really interesting to me, and it was very offensive to me, and he told me not to eat the bread so that I wouldn't be gaining any more weight, and to be careful of the bread, and that was a really hard thing for me, and he said, you know, I wouldn't tell you this except for the Spirit's telling me to, and I wondered, you know, and I was like, well, that's really harsh, and so, you know, of course I will be careful. But then I met his wife, and who's a size, you know, just a little tiny, tiny thing. And so you kind of wonder, you know, like, is that how you see how women are supposed to be, is you know, so tiny? And I wondered if he was asking the elders about their knee problems, and if they had good knees. And so that was just a hard start, that I had to learn to love him, just because, you know, that's really your first conversation, is that you're supposed to teach reverence. And then, oh, by the way, you're fat. I mean, that's not what he said, but you know, that's how women kind of sometimes take it. So then I get out into the field, and a lot of the Chileans asked me if I could make cookies, and I wondered where that came from. I wondered if there were sister missionaries that were just out there to make cookies. I couldn't tell. And since then, I've heard stories about, you know, that's what women do, they make cookies. And so it was interesting, and I had taken a lot of Spanish beforehand, but I was better at reading and writing than speaking, and so my oral skills and my listening comprehension were a little bit hard, but I could understand that, and I was so confused as if, well, do you want American cookies, or is that just what women do? And culturally, too, like, the Chilean culture is very different with what women do, too. So I just thought that was really interesting, that I thought, well, I didn't bring anything to make cookies. I never even thought about making cookies. Which, further on, I did, because I got asked so much that I made cookies on April Fool's Day, because I thought I would teach the Chileans a little bit of culture, so I made cookies with salt and some sugar. Ooh. As my April Fool's joke, because I just thought, okay, I'll make your cookies then. So I finally did. They never asked me to make cookies again. My first two companions, I struggled a little bit at the beginning. My first companion was actually dating one of the elders. She was Chilean, and she was dating one of the American elders, and it was kind of a weird thing, and it was just, being so new, it was a really confusing time. And she got sent home, and then I got a second companion that she didn't speak any English, and I thought that was going to be really good for me and for the language, except for she was just tired, and she told me basically that when you've been in the mission for 14 months, you'll be tired too. So after just those were a few experiences of thinking, okay, how do I teach reverence? How do I learn this language and teach reverence and make cookies and do all these things that I was just ready to go home, because that wasn't, what I was there for. And then I got an emergency transfer, and that was so good. They just literally by myself put me on a bus, and I was on a bus for 24 hours, and I just stayed put because I mean, it was so new in the country. I hadn't even been there a couple of months, and so I was on a bus, and I knew I was supposed to be friendly with people, but I hadn't really had any teaching experiences because of my first two companionships, and they were both short-lived, that I really didn't know how to teach in Spanish, and so I just smiled. I mean, I knew I had the badge, and so I just smiled at people, and I got to my, 24 hours later, I got to my new area, and my companion came and got me, and she said that we had appointments that night, and I was so excited to actually be able to teach. But I had a zone leader who was so anxious about having his numbers of how many he baptized and his zone. And he was really wanting to be the AP. And so he was really, really, really forceful with his zone. Assistant to the president. He wanted to be the assistant to the president. And so he wanted really good numbers. And so my companion kind of fell into that and fell into working hard. And I remember I hadn't had really any teaching experience because of my last two companions, and I was so new in the mission. And she wanted to just please her zone leader, just kind of like you please your priesthood leaders. And she was sending me out with a 9-year-old girl. We were doing splits. And that would have been fine had they been, teenagers closer to our age, but she was sending me with this 9-year-old girl. And I was so lost, I had no idea what to do. And finally I told her, I can't do this. This isn't right. I really feel like we're a companionship for a reason. And that's great that you want to work hard, because I'm here to work hard. I was in my last area ready to go home because I wasn't working. But I'm not going to go out with a 9-year-old girl anymore. It can't happen. It's not appropriate, and it's not right. And I'm sure it's not good. But the zone leader was so worried about his numbers. And I think that's another thing, too, that I think elders get so caught up in numbers, and they get asked so many times, how many people did you baptize? And I think that sister missionaries, where they don't have that, they can really get out there and teach if permitted. They can get out there and teach because they don't have to worry about, well, I actually physically baptized this many, and it's not, it's not a competition. Let me baptize this one, and having a fight with their companion. So that companion, we worked that out, and that zone leader, crazy things. We were at the church until 2 in the morning because he wanted us to decorate for the mission president. And I just remember thinking, if they make this guy a mission president, or an assistant to the president, this is ridiculous. There's no reason that we should be out breaking the rules to decorate the church to look good. Even as a young women leader, I'm so against fluff. If I don't know my lesson, no handout will ever make up for it. Am I talking too fast?
Not at all.
I'm a fast talker, so sometimes I have to slow down. So I just really think the content of the lesson needs to be there and not the fluff. And so those kind of things were annoying, and he never did get made assistant to the president. Then I went and I got another transfer, and I went up and I was in this area called Copiapó, and you may have heard about it a few years back. There, the miners that were in Chile, that was Copiapó. So I was in Copiapó, and we were teaching a lady, and her son was really interested, and she was really interested, but she had a lot of health problems. And I had my monthly interview with my mission president, and he would come around to the different cities. And I was, you know, giving him kind of the, can't even think of a word. I just, you know, filling him in on information. I'm still really tired. But I was filling him in on everything. And I was telling him about this woman and her son that we were teaching. And he said, kill her with kindness. Maybe make her some cookies. So back to the cookie thing again. And I can make some really good cookies. But not, I mean, Chilean ingredients are so different. And Chilean, the way you cook and everything is so different, that I just thought, I didn't sign up to cook. And so that was just really weird. And then I went home and I just thought, well, how am I even going to figure out how to make cookies here? And then I realized she was a diabetic. And I was like, he really wants me to kill her. With these cookies or something. Kill her with kindness. And I just thought that was really interesting that, you know, that's, I wondered to myself, would he ever say that to an elder? Would you ever say to an elder, kill them with kindness,
make them some cookies?
And so I found that really interesting. And from there, I was working hard with my companion, and I had some amazing experiences in that area. My uncle had served in the area 30 years previous to this time. And I had just found that out in just writing letters. I had just found out that he had been in the city. And we had been doing, in Chile they have a siesta, which is a nap time where there's downtime. So we would study the languages, and then right after the siesta time, kind of things in the city were kind of just low-key. You couldn't really find a lot of people to teach. And so we had lists of members that had been baptized that were active. And so we would just kind of go out and try to find them and just kind of see where they were at, kind of get their information, kind of clear up, you know, get them on our list or off our list. And in doing that, I came across a lady who said, I used to be a member of your church, but I'm not. And I didn't know what she meant by that, so we talked about it a little bit further, and it wasn't that she wasn't a member of our church anymore, it's just that she just wasn't participating. And a lot of Chileans kind of have that idea, you don't participate, then you're not part of it anymore. And so in talking to her, it occurred to me that when she had gotten baptized was when my uncle was there. And there are so many stories to tell, but turns out my uncle was the one that had baptized her. And it was a really special experience, because it sounds like I might be negative towards my mission, but I really did love my mission, and I really loved that I was bilingual, and I loved that I got to be in Chile and to be with those people, and it was life-changing, and I really feel that it made me a better person. So there are good experiences, and that was one of them. The highlights is that I just really felt that through the experience of like teaching her and reconnecting with her, and then being able to teach her family, it just kind of made me think that God loves everybody, because he sent a 19-year-old boy to her, and then 30 years later sent his niece. And because I had that same last name, and because she started remembering things, it was a really, really good experience. And so for me, I was having this really good experience sharing with her what I thought was good and having her accept it. And so for me, that was like, it just felt like this might be just the reason I'm here. This whole 18 months is I'm here for this girl, for this woman. Like, somehow she's connected to me and to my uncle, and it's a good experience. And because of that, because we were able to teach her family, our numbers were kind of high that month. And for me, it wasn't about them. It was bigger than that. It was my uncle. It was, I don't know if I can even articulate it or put it into words, but it was a pretty big deal. Now, this mission president had something that I didn't particularly like. He was big on numbers, and if he were to go on a mission again, in fact, he was a mission president again. He was my neighbor's mission president, and he didn't do this. But at that time, he wanted high numbers, and so he made these ties. There were these ties they made, and if you baptized, or if you were a sister, if you taught, and then they were baptized, I think it was two potential priesthood leaders, or five people, or an eternal family. I think It's something like that was a little. If you accomplished that and got that you know, baptized that many, then you would get a tie to wear to all the mission conferences to prove that you were a good missionary. And if you were a sister, you got to wear a vest. They made vests. And I remember that mission companion and I, she was my favorite. We worked so hard. We got along so well. We were good friends. And she lives in Arizona, and so when she comes into town, it's just, you know, one of those people that you really connect with, you know. She's got kids and a husband, but when she comes into town, it's still really good. And because she shared that experience with me, too, I think is one of the reasons that we're close, because she, with me, taught this family that my uncle had taught. Well, the woman when she was 9. Anyway, so we were doing some good work, and we also got really sick. And fortunately, I'd never gotten sick to my stomach on my mission, which a lot of people do when they go to South America. But sick, like, with a really bad cold and the flu and just congested and really, really sick. But we were still trying to work hard. We even went to a mission conference, and the mission president's wife said, "Go home and go to bed. You both look like death." But we were working so hard, and so we took a few days just to recuperate. And we were just feeling good about our success and getting over our sickness. And we had a zone leader that we called to check in and, you know, give them our numbers of how many lessons we had taught and everything and our current baptisms. And he said, and it brought my companion to tears, he said, "If you could just get one more wet, you could earn your best." And that was, I think that was so hard just to take it, like, this isn't a subject that we're teaching or this isn't caring about people, but this is just about getting one more wet to get a best. And I remember she was like, "Are we not doing the right thing here? And are we not doing a good enough job?" And for me, I really think that we did a good job in coming back and talking to my uncle and the connection that we have with that one woman and the experiences that he had. He said that he left Chile feeling like his work wasn't done, and he had felt really strongly that his oldest son would return to Chile just from experiences that he had had and from his patriarchal blessing and different things. And then his son chose a different path. And so he just always felt like somebody from his family needed to go finish what he started. And so for somebody to take that away from me because I didn't get one more wet and earn a vest, it just really, I just think, it just really just took a beautiful experience and kind of crushed it is the best way I can describe it. So that was really hard, and I'm really glad that I didn't earn a vest. I never did. I had a companion that I was friends with, she earned a vest, and I was so proud of her because we were at a mission conference, and all the elders that had gotten their numbers and gotten baptisms got their ties, and they were so proud to put their ties on there right in the chapel in front of everyone. I remember they gave her vest, and they started chanting in the chapel, which I guess they never learned about the reverence lesson that I was supposed to teach them. They started chanting in the chapel, "Que le ponga, que le ponga," and que le ponga, which is put it on, put it on, put it on. And she wouldn't, right there in front of everyone. And we had changed mission presidents, and the new mission president kind of had the leftover vests and tie. We saw that. He quit that. And, like, after that experience, no more. He told us, "No more, we're not here. I don't think that it's such a good idea." And I'm so proud of her for standing up, that she was there for the people, and that she was that example. And then I got transferred to a new area. I was called to be Hermana Coordinadora, which is like a sister coordinator. And that was really a good experience because we all the missionaries had the same stewardship. I can't remember sleep-deprived girls' camp this week. The same stewardship to teach, but they just had different needs. And so it was kind of nice that we had a group of sisters together. So our district class, we would we'd stay together, and it was kind of nice to just kind of be women together. Sometimes guys need their guy time, and girls need their girl time, and then sometimes we need the two together. And so that was a really good thing. So because I had that calling, I was sent to the mission home to be trained with all of the district leaders. And so I was the only female in the audience. And I remember the AP, the assistant to the president, he was giving the training, and
he said, he kind of condemned the elders and said, you know, some of you have a hard time with sister missionaries. You don't think they're doing a good job. You think they're here for the wrong reasons. But I promise you that if you will treat them like you treat your very own sister, you will have a good time. And he said that he told them that he had been in a zone with me and that we had a good time and we worked hard because there was that respect. But I do think the problem with that is that even with brothers and sisters and still kind of that attitude of, in the family I'm from, the attitude is boys are better kind of thing. And so you can tell someone, treat them like you would your sister, but if they're not treating their sister with respect, then it's not going to work. Because I come from a family like that, and it's very hard for me to be in my own family where my grandmother was all about her sons and her sons having the priesthood and making sure that her grandson sang at her funeral and that kind of thing. And I know that there's differences, but... They can work together, and so I think that was such a good thing for him to say. If those elders in that audience or in that congregation, if they had respect for their sisters in their families at home, and so whether or not they had that was a different thing. Because we were like a district of sisters. Well, of course, sister missionaries couldn't ever do baptismal interviews, and so we were always having to call in the district leader or the zone leader to do baptismal interviews, so that investigators could be baptized. And since we were a district of just sister missionaries, it was my responsibility to not only call and get my own interviews, but to get them for the other companionships in my district. And what was hard is they were so worried about numbers because they actually physically could baptize. I think it was really hard for them to have to give up their teaching to get their numbers to come in and do our interviews. And but we were all about people. And so instead of being about people and being there for us, which was actually part of their responsibility, it just didn't give them the numbers. They kind of made it seem like a hassle. So I just would give them a thank you card with just like some little treat because they wanted their cookies. And that got mocked. And I thought that was really funny that I'm supposed to be here to teach cookies, but then if I give you a little treat with a thank you note, then that's mocked too. So either way, I'm bad. I'm either supposed to make you cookies, but when I do, I'm mocked and belittled because that's just what women do and women are cheesy. And so I could tell you a lot of other good stories about my mission. There are good stories, but those are just some things that made me question, you know, just why am I being treated a little bit differently? And since I've been home from my mission, I've noticed a few different things. I've been in the Young Women program for quite a few years, and just recently the president, but before then I wasn't the president, but I was a leader, and it was always interesting to me that if there was any kind of doctrinal question, I would, because they were only women, they would refer back to me because they had been on a mission, I was supposed to be an expert in the scriptures. And that I thought was interesting because a mission doesn't make you better than anyone else. And if you're part of a religion or part of anything, you should know what is entailed there and you should know what it is about. And so just because they didn't go on a mission doesn't mean that they can't know the doctrine or can't know scriptures. And just because I don't went on a mission doesn't mean that I have all the answers. So I thought that was interesting. But then if there was a man, like say somebody from our bishopric or a priesthood leader in that young woman group, they would always refer to the priesthood first. So I thought that was I think that's interesting that I'm supposed to be a scriptorian if there's not a priesthood leader. So it's kind of like priesthood leader, return missionary. When everybody on their own can study and know the doctrine. So I am just, another thing that I've noticed too is this attitude. You know, we talked about being cute and the cute missionaries is a lot of females will say to me, I was going to go on a mission, but I got married. And I don't necessarily know that that's spiteful or mean. I just think it's a funny thing to say as if you have to do one or the other. You can do both. Or you can shoot, you know, or neither. And I just think it's almost like they just kind of... I almost feel like when they're saying it, even though they're not being mean, I feel that they're just, it's kind of like... Yeah. I'm so glad somebody would marry me. Kind of thing, you know. I didn't have to go on a mission. I was able to get married, and
I think that's interesting that people think of it that way, and I don't know, just the way that it's kind of mission or marriage, and or you know, I don't know. You can take that further. I'm still so tired. But I think I learned from the whole experience, you know, with all of my positive experiences. I think that even though there were things like, I'm supposed to teach reverence, I'm supposed to make cookies, why am I not married, why am I here? I'm really glad that I was a sister missionary. I'm really glad that I didn't have to experience, you know, coming home and having somebody say, how many people did you baptize? I rarely get asked that. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes have gotten asked if I shared the gospel, which all missionaries do. But I am so glad that I didn't have to do that, so that I could focus on the people, and that I didn't have that. But I do see that even though I didn't have the priesthood to actually physically do the baptizing, that despite all of these experiences, that I can share, and I can teach, and I can enlighten as good as any elder. And so for me, it was a really good experience overall. It's just some of those things were very interesting, and I often wonder what could be done to teach elders that these sister missionaries are every bit as good as they are. Only there might be a few different needs, just like on that hike. And now we'll hear from Tamara.
Well, I'm going to stand up. I hope that's all right. Krista and I actually teach together in the same school, but I only came to this school about 4 years ago, and I just have to out Krista on this one, that we were assigned to the same grade. We had classrooms right next to each other, and things were going fine, and I was getting along fine with Krista, and then one day, we came in one morning to teach, and the kids hadn't come upstairs yet, and she was holding some stuff from her mailbox, and there was a memo in there from the principal, and she was reading it, and she just looked at the memo, and then she looked at me, and she goes, I am not doing this, I am not doing that. And that's when Krista went from being, you know, an amiable colleague to a kindred spirit. I love that, and my guess is that she was a very feisty missionary, very successful in that regard. Krista's kind of done a chronological look at her mission or her mission experiences, and I'd like to do it a little bit more thematic. But these thoughts don't really come out in any particular order. They're just kind of random thoughts thrown together, and here's the salad. So I want to preface these thoughts by saying that I was, and Krista was too, she's a little bit younger than I am, but we were missionaries in the mid-90s, and I really believe that the mid-90s, there was a lot going on there with sister missionaries that is not going on now, and may not have been going on before. I'm not entirely certain about that, and we can maybe explore that together a little bit, but I really believe there were some very specific forces that influenced sister missionaries and whether women decided to go on missions in that period. So I'm coming out of that mindset, and of course, like anyone else who's talking about their own experiences, I'm subject to my own limitations. I had my experience. It makes me gives me a firsthand experience of what sister missionaries did. But it's very hard to speak for all sister missionaries. But I know that a lot of the things that I experienced on my mission were not unique to me or to my mission, and sorting out which is which, is sometimes difficult to do. And one more disclaimer before I talk about some themes that go along with this is that there are differences between missionaries who go on their mission site and those who go foreign. And, of course, the other very obvious thing that's very easy to forget is that not all missionaries come from the States. And how the dynamics between elders and sisters work out with missionaries from other countries, I think, is different. Exactly how, I don't know, but I admit that my experience is going to be that of a sister missionary who was from the States and who went stateside on their mission. I actually went to California, Sacramento. So the first idea I'd like to talk about is that sister missionaries really don't get discussed. They were discussed a lot in the 90s, but you don't hear about it very much anymore anywhere. You don't even hear about it very much at, like, Sunstone. If you look at, like, women's issues that get discussed among elder Mormons in any setting, you're going to hear a lot more about polygamy. You're going to hear a lot more, especially these days, about Mother in Heaven. You're going to hear a lot more about women in the priesthood. Women on missions hardly ever gets any play. And I don't know why that is. And I was discussing it with my sister. I have two sisters, both of whom went on missions. And I was discussing with both of them this week some of these things. And my one sister said, she's the young women's president in her ward. And she said, once in a while, it'll come up that I had been on a mission. And the young women, they just don't care. They just don't care. Oh, you went on a mission. Oh, you went bungee jumping. Oh, yeah, you know, it's no biggie. And I think that sister missionary discussions about that experience have just dropped out altogether, including among returned sister missionaries. I mean, Krista and I don't even talk about it too much. Of course, we've got plenty of other things to discuss, but there was a time when being a sister missionary was a lot bigger deal than it is now. So I'm just bringing that up just as a food for thought. The next thing I'd like to discuss is why do women go on missions? Now, Krista is not unusual in the sense that she felt strongly that she should go. And I had companions that felt that way, but I never felt that way. And I knew many sisters who didn't feel that way. So why are you out there? Well, I think it's fair to just plain admit that there's some prestige associated with missionary work. You get a farewell. You get a homecoming. You get to talk when you leave. You get to talk when you come back. You get a title. Everybody calls you sister. You know, and if you're lucky enough, you can pick up a language. And all of these things add prestige. There's an honor associated with it. And I have to say that I really think part of the reason that a mission has these prestige associated with it is that it is primarily a male experience. And to the extent the sister missionaries can garner any prestige from the experience, it is because they have had a male experience to a degree. And so there's, you know, that's kind of how you, I think that sort of thing attracts some women. And it certainly did me. And it attracted me so much that, it was primarily the reason I went on a mission. Krista had far more pure motives. Mine were really mostly so that the rest of my life I could say I'm a returned missionary. Many years ago, I realized maybe I could have just said it anyway. Who would know, you know? But anyway, at the time, I was young and honest and... And so, the title, 18 Months on the Periphery, has to be qualified. That assumes that women aren't on the periphery anyway, you know, and they are. So I knew that as a young woman, I knew that. And my intentions in going on a mission were to move in from the margins. That was the point. To get out of that marginal area and to get into the mainstream, to be asked, what does this scripture mean? And to be considered an authority on it because you're a returned missionary. And I wanted that. And also there was, especially in the 90s, there was a lot of, you know, if you were really a feminist, you went on a mission. You really went and had a male experience. And so I was very deeply influenced by these thoughts. I had young women leaders who had been on missions, and I was very, very attracted to that idea. What I didn't know was that when I entered the mission field, I was going to be even more marginalized for the stretch of that experience. For the length of that experience, I would not be less marginalized, but more. But I didn't know that until I got out there. And then, you know, once you get out there, you're kind of stuck. So... The other thing is that the fervor around sisters serving missions in the 90s was particularly potent. I didn't go to BYU, but I had two sisters that did, that said if you were in certain circles, it was almost wrong if you didn't go. You get 21, you don't have a ring on your finger, you're in the MTC, that's it. And if you're not, then you were just shunned. Well, that's crazy when you think about the history of sister missionaries, and it has not always been a very honorable place. It's where you go if you can't get married. But by the 90s, things had changed, and they had changed so much that the pressure was really on. So I looked around and said to myself, what I never want to do is be in a group of Mormon women and be the only one who'd never gone on a mission. This I cannot tolerate. So I went. Now, there's another big problem besides being marginalized in the field. It's missionary work. And I hate missionary work. I've always hated it. I hate it. And so I was in the MTC, and I got through that experience okay. I don't know how. And then I got out to the mission field, and I realized, oh, my gosh, I got to do missionary work. And, you know, it's stupid. It sounds ridiculous. You're going on a mission. Hello? You don't know that you were going to do missionary work? But I tell this because I want to emphasize that the point of going on a mission had nothing to do with missionary work. It had to do with my experience as a woman in the church and trying to change how I would be seen for the rest of my life. It wasn't about the mission. It was about being returned from the mission. And so this was a pretty big problem. And I remember I wrote a note, letter home to my mother, and it started out, oh, crap, what have I done? and you know, my mother was not in a good... My father was very ill at the time, and she still had kids in high school. And, I mean, she didn't need it. But there I was in the MTC. Oh, crap, what am I doing here? Well, anyway, so, you know, one of the questions is, did it work? Did being a return missionary get me back in from the margins once I was returned, because it certainly wasn't that way on the mission, very marginalized on the mission. But as I got, when I got home, did it work? Well, it works with one group, other returned sister missionaries. That's it. Nobody else cares. Sometimes not even other returned sister missionaries care. And it can get you excluded. I was just shocked. And it can get you excluded in these groups. Other elders or other missionaries who happen to be male. It can get you very excluded in those groups. And not only that, but among returned elders. I had many times when I would go to dances after I got home, and it would come out pretty fast that I had been on a mission. That was it. It was over. Now, I don't need to be married to somebody who has those kind of, you know, fears of successful women anyway. But it does say something about Mormon culture that a Mormon man is threatened by a returned sister missionary. That does say something. And I'm not saying all Mormon men, but it does happen. It happens enough that becomes often part of an experience for a returned sister missionary. So I just want to put that out there as something to keep in mind. Another group that you could be excluded from was, I have this all written down. Let's see, elders, and then women, Mormon women, who did not go on missions. You can get excluded from that group too. And just like Krista said, that there are these small comments like, oh, you went on a mission. Oh, I was going to go on a mission, but I got married. I really believe that when that happens, they do not mean anything by it. I really believe that. But it harkens back to a day when women went on missions because they could not get married. And it reminds the returned sister missionary who's not married or who might be married later that maybe you were on a mission because a member of the male population, the patriarchy, you were not able to please any of them enough. And so you had to be a missionary. And that is a stigma that still exists. It does not really reflect the reality of the numbers. most sister missionaries, as far as I know, get married. And just because you don't go on a mission doesn't mean you are going to get married. But the tie between the two is very real in the minds of LDS people, even now. Now, here's another thing I'd like to discuss. I had at one point on my mission, we lived with a woman who was inactive. And I found that inactive women were often some of our best supporters. We were often their only connection to the church. They didn't want to go to church. They were going to fight with somebody at church. You know, who knows? But the sister missionaries were their connection. And often we lived with them. And over the years, they would know all the sister missionaries who came through. They were a support to us, and we were a support to them. Well, one of these women made the observation one time to me. She said, I've known a lot of sister missionaries. She was maybe 28 or 30, I don't know, around in there, and she was single. And she had an apartment, and we rented a room from her. She rented it from the apartment complex. So it was, you know, it worked out fine. And but she said to me one time, all sister missionaries are rebels, all of them. And what she meant, and we talked about it at length, and she said, all sister missionaries fall into there are three types of rebels. One, they were on a mission as a rebellion. The mission itself was an act of rebellion against sexist ideas that said sister missionaries shouldn't go on missions. That was one kind of rebel. Another kind of rebel was a sister missionary who had been involved in serious, usually sexual transgressions before the mission, and the mission was a way to make up for it. Okay, that's rebel number two. Now, the third rebel, I think, is the most interesting, especially in the 90s. The third one, the sister missionary was rebelling against her own mother, who was a feminist-leaning person. And in a rebellion against that mother, she went on a mission sort of to, almost to bring her mother back into the female expectancy. Now, if you look at the 1990s, who would be going on missions in the 1990s? Young single missionaries.
Daughters of
daughters of women who had lived through the women's liberation movement in the 70s. Okay, so if the mother had, to any degree, adopted that or had wondered about it or had ever gone to any ERA meetings or something, you would often see that daughter turn up in the mission field in the 90s as a way to correct her own mother. And it was very strange that you would have one woman who was on a mission as a feminist statement paired up with another woman who was on a mission against a feminist family member. Now, I think what it'll be interesting to see is whether you get another crop in, in the mid-2020s. And what will those women think about their own missions, the women whose mothers served in the 90s. I think this is an interesting sociological study, and I think it shows something about Mormon women and how some of these generational things maybe play out and how the mission plays into those generational differences. So I think it's important that when you look at sister missionaries, or at least those that served at the time that I served, you often we'll see some sort of rebellion going on. And it did have to do with feminism on one level or another, for or against. The other thing that was a major problem for sister missionaries, and Krista can talk about how isolated she felt from other missionaries, but from returned sister missionaries that I have talked to, by and large, the number of sister missionaries is so small that you're just kind of spread out around the mission, and you hardly ever see any other sister missionaries. Well, one of the problems with that is that if your companion is crazy, and some of them are, you're stuck with them. Now, this doesn't mean that elders don't have crazy companions. They do. But you've got maybe down the street, maybe in your own apartment, somebody to switch up. Let's say you've got four elders, you've got two companionships in one apartment. All right, now this is the crazy elder. This is his companion. They go out one day, the next day they go out, the next day they go out, the next day, and he only has to be with his companion every third day. I mean, that can be worked out very easily among elders. That does not happen with sisters. Pretty much, if your companion is crazy, you're pretty well stuck. And the only people that can save you are usually inactive Mormon women living in the area. And my experience was that in every area, if you knew where to look, and they were often in the area book, you could find them. It wasn't hard. And they knew the truth. And you could go on splits with them. You could go to their house and cry with them. You could tell your companion, I'm going with, you know, Ruby today, and you're fine some, but I'm spending the day with Ruby. And Ruby glued you back together. And then you could go back out and be with your companion until she, you know, threw another Book of Mormon at you, and then you had to go back to Ruby. But she often knew, and she was often an inactive woman, and never came to church, but she was always there. And I think that's an interesting phenomenon to look at with sister missionaries, is who are the non-sisters in the LDS community who know sisters and their problems? Those women often knew more about what was going on with us than active women. And certainly men didn't know. They just didn't. They were never told. So one of the things that you can do to combat this isolation, in my opinion, is sisters have to get together. They have to get together. One of my sisters went on her mission to Dallas. It was a horrific experience. Her mission president was a jerk. She didn't want to really go. She felt like she should, because I went, and then my other sister went, and there was a lot of family pressure. But it was a terrible experience. But one day, they announced that the sisters would have a sleepover. And I don't know where they had it. She wasn't clear about that. And then it was right before transfer, so everybody came in for the sleepover. She called it a sleepover. They didn't call it a sleepover, but she said it was like a sleepover, Tim, and it was great. And they slept. Well, they didn't sleep. They stayed up all night and talked. And then the next day was transfers, and they switched out. Well, I can't believe that, you know, she told me this, because I have an experience like that, too, on my mission. Shortly before I went home, I went to the we were in the Sacramento area, and so you had to get special permission to go down to the Oakland Temple, which was the nearest temple. And on this particular transfer, we had enough sisters leaving, and we also had some converts that were getting sealed and taking on endowments. And anyway, what happened is that most of the sisters in the mission ended up at the temple. And we had a party in the dressing room. And the temple workers came, and I mean, we were doing our hair and chatting, no, and how's this person in that area, and blah, 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 and oh, you're a new missionary, on and on and on, and we needed it so bad, you just can't believe. And the temple workers came and said, sisters, this is the temple. And we're like, and that worked for about 1 minute, and then we were right back to the usual thing, and then they came and said, sisters, we're sorry, but you're going to have to leave. And we got kicked out of the Oakland Temple. I mean, the sisters of the Sacramento Mission got kicked out of the Oakland Temple. Well, let me tell you.
After the session.
Oh, wait, that was after the session. Oh, we went after the session, and then we ended up on the lawn, and guess what happened? We went right on from where we had picked up, because we were so desperate for the interaction of other women. And so I really think this is a critical part of supporting sister missionaries, is they are too isolated from each other. And it's a problem that elders don't have. Okay, now a few other quick things, and then I want to look at a talk by President Hinckley. One is health issues. Now, health issues, I think, is something we really need to look very closely at in missions, because everybody seems to have gotten sick on their mission, and sometimes those are third world issues, but I think sometimes they are mental health issues. And there's something about mission life for men and women that can really bring out the monster inside. And my sister, who went on her mission to Ireland, said in her entire mission, she never had a well companion, ever. She said, I don't think I worked a full week my entire mission. Okay, now, what's the big deal about this? Well, the big deal is, first of all, I think there may be something about the experience of sister missionaries that does not allow sisters to thrive. I teach school. I love teaching school. I get up every day. I love it. I go most of the time when I'm sick because I love it. But if I did not love my job, I would stay home when I was sick and also other times. Like, I sort of felt like on my mission. I didn't have sick companions, and I was not especially sick on my mission, but it is not uncommon to have a sister missionary like my sister come back and say, in my entire mission, I never worked a whole week because I always had a sick companion. I think that there's something going on there, and I think it needs to be examined. Well, to compound the problem of having a sick companion and sitting around an apartment all day, my sister said every night, in her mission, they collected numbers every night. In my mission, they collected numbers every week. Okay, so the district leader calls. Okay, did you go out today? No, I didn't go out today. My companion is sick. Okay, how many times did you open your mouth? Well, open your mouth means how many times did you say something? Did you cold contact somebody, knock on the door, say, would you like to hear about the church? That stuff was counted daily in her mission. Okay, so he would say, how many times did you open your mouth? And he would say, I guess you didn't hear me. I just said, we didn't go out today. And he said, okay, so no, zero on that? Yeah, zero on that. Okay, how many Book of Mormons did you place? Okay, zero on that. How many discussions did you take? Zero. We have been in the apartment all day. Can't you just fill in the zeros? But he would insist on her going through it until she got so sick of it. She said she took a phone book, and I've done this too. You just pick it up and you just call, hi, we're the sister missionaries in the area. You know, I'll tell you what, people don't like it. Okay, now, what about beauty issues? Krista talked about this, being asked about your knees. I went to two sister missionary conferences on my mission. The first one, the guest speaker was a beauty queen coach. Okay, and you know what she told us? You don't have to eat everything on your plate, sisters. You don't have to. In other words, you don't have to be fat, sisters. You don't have to. Eat less, you won't be so fat. That was the message. I just can't even believe. This was, and it was set up by the missions president's wife. We sat in her home, and I sat on the floor, and we were told not to get fat. My sister who went to Dallas said that she had a companion who wore kind of more bohemian clothes, long skirts and stuff. This did not please the mission president. Guess what happened to her? Got taken to the mall. And, you know, picked out with the mission president and his wife. Can you imagine? Why? And I asked Amy, she said, she wasn't cute enough. She wasn't cute enough. And I said, well, what happened afterwards? She said, hey, you know what happened? And I said, actually, I don't, tell me. She said, she wore them for a while, and then slowly she went back to her old, and by the time she went home, she was wearing her old clothes. You know, I mean, but you see the message? That's an interesting message that gets sent to Mormon women. Okay, now the next thing I want to look at is a talk given by President Hinckley, in October 1997. And I really believe that this talk was, I think the numbers of sister missionaries in the 90s was going up so high that the church felt a huge need to squelch it. In order to keep the mission experience male, it's fine if you have a few sister, you know, mavericks, people running here and there, you know, a few is fine, we can control that. But if the number of elders and the number of sisters in a particular mission gets to be equal, then men do not have an exclusive hold on that experience. And I think that we fear that if women move in, and if we allow them to move in, they will move in. they'll take over and that'll be the end. We already can't keep men in the church. We cannot lose them even before they go out on missions. So, just to preface one more thing about this quote, when I asked my sister about it, I said, I think this is a lot of veiled language. She said, I don't think so. I would have given anything if he'd given the talk before I went on my mission so that I would have said I'm not going. So, I think that looking at this talk is an important thing. And this is part of the reason that I think that the period of the 90s is an interesting... This is one of the things that was going on. There was a lot of pressure on women to go on missions in this period. And then suddenly, almost at the end of the decade, the pressure is taken off. And as far as I can see, the hype of sister missionaries plummeted. The number of sister missionaries plummeted, and it has never gone back up, and I believe that this talk is the reason. Now, I'll just read some parts of it, and then, when we get to the Q&A here in just a minute, we can talk about this, because I think it's a very interesting thing. This talk was given in the priesthood session of October Conference in 1997. This is President Hinckley. Now I wish to say to bishops and stake presidents something concerning missionary service. It is a sensitive matter. There seems to be a growing idea in the church that all young women, as well as young men, should go on missions. We need some young women. They perform a remarkable service. They can get into homes where elders can't, which is very true. And then he talks about his own granddaughters who are on missions. And the language here is very interesting. He says, I confess, as if it's a sin, that I have two granddaughters on a mission. They are bright and beautiful women. They are working hard and accomplishing much good. Speaking to their bishops and their parents, they made their decision to go. They did not tell me until they had turned their papers in, and I had nothing to do with their decision. Don't come to me later and say, but your granddaughters are on missions, President Hinckley. No. He said, look, I didn't know what was going on. Okay, so he washes his hands of it. I say, okay. Now, having made that confession, I wish to say that the First Presidency and the Council of the Twelve are united in saying to our young women that they are under no obligation to serve missions. I hope that I can say what I have to say without being offensive to anyone. Young women should not feel that they have a duty comparable to that of young men. Some of them very much wish to go. If so, they should counsel with their bishop as well as their parents. If the idea persists, the bishop will know what to do. Not the woman, the bishop. Remember, this is priesthood session. I say what has been said before, that missionary work is essentially a priesthood responsibility. As such, our young men must carry the major burden. This is their responsibility and their obligation. Okay, now this is where my sister that had a terrible mission, she heard that, she was like, oh, great. She hates missionary work too. She said, missionary work is a priesthood responsibility. Hallelujah. I am never doing missionary work the rest of my life. And anybody comes and says I'm going to do missionary work, I'm going to tell them, oh, no. President Hinckley said, it is a priesthood responsibility. I mean, sometimes in the church, you got to make that work for you. It's working against you all the time that you don't have the priest. You got to make it work for you sometimes, yeah. Right? Okay. We do not ask young women to consider a mission as an essential part of their life program. Over many years, we have held the age of women higher in an effort to keep the number small. He says it right there. Why do we hold it larger? So that we don't have very many women. That's the point. He says it right here. Again, to sisters, I say that you will be as highly respected. You will be considered as being as much in the line of duty. Your efforts will be acceptable to the Lord and to the church, whether you go on a mission or you don't go on a mission. We constantly receive letters from young women asking why the age for sister missionaries is not the same as it is for elders. We simply give the reasons. But he doesn't give a reason here. Okay? We know that they are disappointed. We know that many of them have their hearts set on missions. We know that many of them wish this experience before they marry and go forward with their adult lives. I certainly do not wish to say or imply that their services are not wanted. Really? I simply say that a mission is not necessary as part of their lives. Now, that may appear to be something of a strange thing to say in priesthood meeting. I say it here because I do not know where else to say it. Bishops and stake presidents of the church have now heard it, and they must be the ones to make the judgment on this matter. And then he went on to talk about senior missionaries. Okay. Women were not in that audience. They got the message. And in my view, the experience of sister missionaries and whether sister missionaries ever felt again like they could or should or were welcome in the mission field was never the same as it was in the mid-90s. Whether that will change in 20 years, 10 years, I don't know. But I really believe that President Hinckley put the kibosh on it right here, and he knew what he was doing, and it worked. Now, you could be like my sister and say, hey, it's no problem, no problem with me. I don't want to go. But there were a lot of people that were hurt by this. And whether you were hurt by it, whether it was a good decision or a bad decision, it was a decision that influenced what women did from that time forward until now. Now, I just want to close with one idea that I think is worth considering. Because President Hinckley laid the foundation here in this talk that missionary work is a priesthood responsibility, I really believe that if you were smart, what you'd do is take that in a little bit, one step further, and say, proselyting is a priesthood responsibility, and put women on service missions. I think we need a lot, and if you did that, I think you'd see the numbers of sister missionaries explode again. You would absolutely see that. The truth is, we've got some problems with our missionary system, partly because knocking on doors is not very efficient. It's boring day after day. I mean, even missionaries in areas where you have a lot of baptisms have problems, and one of the reasons is that you're not really sure how much good it really does. My father was recently put in a nursing home, and my mom and I go often to see him. And we got to thinking the other day, what about a nursing home mission? And we just sat there in that sort of dining room and looked at the residents, including my father, and said, what would a pair of young, healthy women do in a place like this? You can guess what they are. You can set up a thing where it's a nursing home mission. They go to nursing homes all day in one area. They live there for 18 months, their entire mission. And what's going to happen? Pretty soon they're playing Uno with the residents. They're bringing gifts. They're bringing balloons to the residents who have a birthday. They know the names. They're feeding them. They're pushing them around. They're helping them in and out. This could work. And it's work that needs to be done in the world. And it's work that Mormons ought to be doing anyway. And I really believe that President Hinckley laid a foundation for us to go a very different direction with sister missionaries. And you could even actually take this and you could even say sister missionaries or even elders do this kind of work all day long and proselyte at night when people are home. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, but most people work during the day. So I think that this is an interesting idea to consider, that we radically change how we do missionary work and think about service as a major component instead of just 4 hours a week. And perhaps, and we could do this with all missionaries, we could say you do service 9 hours a day and you do missionary work three. Or we could say elders do proselyting and sisters do other things. And it doesn't have to be just nursing homes. You know, there are plenty of things that you could do in poor neighborhoods in the United States and abroad that would be more effective and more helpful to the people than proselyting. So I just want to put those ideas out there, and Krista's as well. And And now that we're done with our presentations, maybe we can have some Q&A or discussion or whatever anybody else would like to. If that's all right, Lauren, is
that
okay?
That's great. Yeah, we just have about 20 minutes for Q&A, so I'll let you guys.
I'm just curious, we've heard a lot about sort of the controversy surrounding women getting the priesthood, and I was wondering what your opinion is of sort of pushing for women to get the priesthood, or do you think that's necessary or
good idea? I don't want it. I don't think I do well with it, but I don't know if you do, though.
I think women say they want the priesthood because they think it'll equalize them with men. But I think that, let me see if I can articulate this.
I think that's a hard thing to say.
If women get the priesthood, it will no longer be a male privileged area, and therefore men will move to another area to. I don't know this, but I worry that what we're looking at when we say we want priesthood is that we want what men have. But part of the reason they like what they have is that women don't have it. So if women have it, I think we'll think about the priesthood in a very different way. And it's, I don't see it as a, I think women having the priesthood is an interesting idea. I don't see it as a way to equalize women and men in the church. I think that something will happen, and then we'll have it something else that's a male privilege. It might take 30 or 40 years, but women will not get what they're looking for if you go down that road. I think you have to go to some other, you have to go through some other things. And also, if you get priesthood, we're going to have to rethink what priesthood really is.
A couple of years ago, there was a book that some guy wrote, he's a doctor, I think, in Las Vegas, and he put out Sunstone. It was free for everybody. You know, how inefficient the missionary system is.
Was he LDS?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, he was, said some of the same things that you just said about how inefficient they are. And I wonder, do you happen to know, or is anybody downtown listening to or looking at the possibility of radically changing the missionary system? I mean, even for young men, because I don't know that it's working. See, mm-hmm. I had a wonderful mission experience in the United States, taking Spanish. It was a 2.5-year mission without mm-hmm. the MDC. Mm-hmm. The Lord punished me because I wanted to go on a foreign mission that was English speaking for 2 years, and I went on a 2.5-year mission that was Spanish speaking. And I had a marvelous president. He would yeah. call up the end of the week and say, how are you doing? You have any mm-hmm. baptisms? And I'd say, well, you know, we could probably push this family in, but I think they need someone. Elder, yeah. you know best.
Yeah.
And we didn't
that
have
happens.
P-days. Yeah. He says, if you want to go to a movie, go to a movie. You don't have to do it on a Monday.
What would he lie?
You have to do it on a, you know. And well, the fact is we didn't do those things. We didn't have, mm-hmm. and we were overlapping with the California mission. There were two separate missions at that time, and we had a conference one time, and the California mission, Brian Bunker, was an orator, and he gave this talk of, we need men, men who can help me, like that thing. And a couple weeks later, my mission president, this is sexist, we had a little zone conference, and after the morning meeting, the girls, the missionary
sisters
and the missionary, they went out to the kitchen to prepare something,
okay.
of course, to eat.
But, of course.
But
of course.
While they were doing that, he was walking around making fun of President Bunker. He was going, brr, 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 brr. Grant Burbage. And anyway, he said, his wife came in and she said, Grant, you stop that right now. And I worked, I was an AP. We just called, yeah. we called them assistants to the president. Nobody yeah. could use all these acronyms in those days, you know, PETA and AP, all that. Zone counselor, we didn't say ZC. And we got our own mailbox, and we got rented our own apartment, and we paid our own electricity bill, and
yeah.
had to open up checking account. I mean, I'm sorry, is anybody downtown listening to what's happening, or
I don't know, because I see it too. I see a lot of missionaries that when I see things going on as you're driving down the street, or you see them just at the stores, and you think, well, you're just hanging out having fun.
No fun. No.
Well, we do want to have fun, but you know, like, it's just, you know, like, there's something, go to a movie.
Right, right.
I mean, that's...
I think you bring up an excellent point. I don't know what else to do. If I wrote a letter to the general authorities, it gets sent back, so, you know.
Overall, was your experience as a sister missionary positive, I guess, for the rest of your life? I know some of the sisters, yeah, they should have been good, but if they were in the back, they would have never done that. It's been devastating to them, because like a couple of sisters from my mission already had master's degrees, they were 25, and they were treated really bad. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was ridiculous. Like, I look back at my mission, like, I wouldn't want a mission again today because of some of the things like that. Because I just thought it was just mistreatment, and it was just openly sexist, it was openly, like, just bigotry, like, it was wrong.
Towards missionaries?
What's up?
You're saying it.
To the sisters. I'm very good friends with a few of them still, and, like, they've all kind of exited the church over there.
I would go back again.
It's really devastating for some of them, and I just wonder, like, if... how many sisters feel that? Because all the ones I know, maybe it's just we had a bad mission president, things like that. But it was pretty hard.
But that's part of the experience.
Sure.
A lot of people tell this story about, I had a great mission president, or I had a crappy mission president. And in a lot of cases, that makes all the difference in the world. And there's really not very much standardization against mission,
mission president, though, because they're not put in a position a lot of times if they have a master's degree, they can't be in leadership.
Right.
So there's already things that they you just see, like, they're just treated like a bunch of young teenage girls or something. Like, I just know, like, a couple of them are really good friends with still to this day, and I talk to them, and I'm a feminist myself, and they're feminists, and they have a really hard time coping with the church. Due to their mission more than anything, because it exposed it to them.
Where did you go? Can I ask where you went?
Tucson.
I think that the reason that I would do it again is because my experience was so much more because I had a love for passion before I even went. A passion for Spanish. Remember, I've been camping all weekend. Sorry, I'm saying some ridiculous things. I have had a passion for Spanish. I am studying Spanish before I even went, and the culture. And so I think I would go back, but then it was bigger than that, you know what I mean, outside of the mission. So I think I would go again if I got that experience. I don't know. I don't know if I would go to mission to Tucson. But...
Well, I mean, I'll have a choice.
Well, no.
Yeah,
no.
Right.
I think that I would... It was a very mixed thing for me. I have some experiences and relationships that I cherish to this day. But I don't know that I couldn't have gotten them another way. And I don't know that it was worth the mental anguish that I went through morning after morning after weary morning, getting up, living with a woman that... I had companions that ended up in mental wards in a hospital in Salt Lake before the mission was over. You know, I mean, there were I'm not sure that those good experiences were worth what I went through. They were there. There's no question. Whether they were worth it, I don't know. It's still a question.
I'll say this. I couldn't go on a mission again just because I couldn't. I would not be in the system.
We're not young enough, you're not dumb enough.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't make it one day. But I'm saying, like, with sisters, I've had girls talk to me, I've worked with this dog, they want to go to mission, and I'm like, how can I tell you in any other way as I'm going to jump off a cliff not to do this? Like, and I mean it just because of what I see from my mission, like, just from the sisters' mission. I felt bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
I really did.
I like your idea about increasing the service opportunities in the services. I hope the church continues to move that direction and really expand the service mission opportunities. And eventually these two worlds will collide when you want to serve and the service missionary opportunities. I think that's great. Also want to point out that at BYU, the Women's Studies program is filled with young women who want to study what happens to sisters and women on missions.
What? Really?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Women's studies program at BYU is fairly new, but it is attracting women who want to study. So,
do you have a card or something? Do they have therapists?
I'm really encouraged by what I hear discussed in the classes and
Very interesting.
Maybe when they find out things turn out in the very negative, they'll put squash on top of it.
I don't know. I don't know. But I know that the church is interested in what does come out.
And I think that's an interesting thing because Krista and I are both talking about, well, I've been home 20 years. And Krista, she can tell me how long she's been home. Not as long as me. But she, I wonder if the experience of sister missionaries has changed since President Pinkus taught. Not only did the numbers go down, not only did the pressure go down, but perhaps the experience improved. I don't know. It would be an interesting thing to look at.
Sisters organized in their own zones, their own districts, they have their own leadership. They even have Sister AP,
yeah,
as well as a brother AP. Women in those missions tend to thrive better.
Yeah.
Because they create the experiences that they need for women.
It did for me when we had a district of sisters. At first I thought it was really weird. I thought that it was kind of this far out there idea. But it was really good having had those experiences where I felt isolated, where I was the only sister missionary in a city. And when we were able to get together and discuss things with sister missionaries, it was really weird because I was so against the idea. And so when they told me that that was my assignment, I just thought that seems like such a kind of a rebel idea. But it was such a good thing for us to be together in a district.
I think as studies start to show this, the church will do it. I don't think they'll look at it as negative, but they'll look at it as how can we. They know that sisters are having physical and mental difficulties on missions. Mm-hmm. To be able to connect this to oppressive policies in missions, I think will be our big.
Well, that sounds great.
The last thing I want to point out is that the sense of accomplishment of being a sister missionary, that I think every sister missionary hopes for when they come home, I think in a weird twist, if you can look at every sister who says, I would have gone on a mission that I got married, is actually speaking to that sense of you're a return missionary if I want to. It's a weird twist of what
it is,
say it, but I think that's where it comes from. That's the root of that. Every time someone says that to you, you can take it as this is the one.
Well, you know, there I forgot to say this in my comments, but there's another place where I've used it, and it works very well. I teach gospel doctrine in my ward, and when I'm about to present an idea that I think is not going to fly with some men, I start with the mission story. Not because it has anything to do with missions or missionary work, but to assert my authority as a returned missionary. And in that place, there are places where it does work, and it does help. And, you know, and it makes it harder for Mormon men to go, well, if you had been on a mission, you would know, blah, blah, blah. Well, no, sorry, but I just explained to you that I've been on a mission. And it can quash a lot of those problems beforehand, and I have truly enjoyed that. Yeah. No, go ahead.
Okay. I think it's really interesting to talk about being marginalized as a woman in the church and going on a mission to kind of make your place in the power structure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering about how missions have been criticized as being colonialist a little bit. I'm wondering about, like, as a woman who's been marginalized, that you're in the power structure, if you have thoughts on what that experience is like with going into marginalized communities.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, being both on the inside and the outside.
Especially in children.
Yeah.
Okay, she's going to think for a minute. I'm actually working on a master's degree in colonial history right now, and this has been one of the good things that's come out of my mission, is that in spite of the fact that I'm a Mormon missionary in the late 20th century, I do have a special interest in Christian missionaries during the European colonial period, and they faced many of the same problems that we face. And their solutions were very much the same as some of ours. And in fact, you can see this in President Hinckley's talk, where he says, we need some sister missionaries. They can get into homes where we cannot. That is a prevailing theme in missionary periodicals coming out of India and Africa, writing back to their headquarters in Europe saying, we cannot get the women, we cannot reach the children with only men. You've got to send us women, you've got to send us women. And the men have to be married before they come because we need their wives. And because you can't get in, and if you can't get the women, you can't get the race. I mean, now these are very colonialist ideas, these are very sexist ideas, but the mission experience, the Mormon mission experience, comes out of the 19th century. And it is still a 19th century institution, which is one of the reasons I think we're having trouble, is that we're still running it very much, although there are differences, but in overall we're still running it very much the way that missionaries worked in the 19th century. The mindset is still very colonialist. And I think you'd find some interesting things if you looked at missionary pictures and compared them to colonial pictures. What you're going to see is one white face and a lot of brown faces. And where is the Mormon missionary in those pictures? In strategic places, in the middle, to the side, above. The same things were going on in the colonial period, and you can see exactly the same things. And the other organization that will produce pictures very much like this is the Peace Corps. Very well intended, but very colonialist in its nature. And I think that Mormon women, I'm not sure that they see it any more than Mormon women, English women coming out of India who went to India and said, oh, look, I'm a marginalized woman, you're all marginalized. I think some women saw that. A lot of women went and said, you are the benighted race and I am one of the enlightened, and they went forward that way. On the other hand, even as they did that, they achieved status by removing themselves from the core of European society and going out to the marginalized people where they could be the boss, where they could be the big, I mean, you know, like, you know, you could only be a nurse in Europe, but you went to Africa, you could be a doctor. And women in the colonial period did that as well. Whether they were aware of it or not depends on the woman. I don't know.
I think I had that too, because my mission experience was different because I had the respect of I was an American. So I had that respect of somehow I was a little bit better than the Chilean people, and then I had a religious title, and so I had that respect of I was the white American missionary. I had religious power within that culture, and I had the white American power. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of respect there. So in my mission pictures, I'm placed in those places. In the center, not surrounded by everyone.
Michael.
Well, certainly there are institutional barriers that create the disconnect for lady missionaries. You know, like the fact you have a 25-year-old lady missionary with a master's degree who now has to report to a 19-year-old snot-nosed kid who
doesn't has a GED.
That's institutional, and for now, non-negotiable. But at the same time, we cannot underestimate the devastating effect of President Inglis's talk in removing whatever constraints there were on the conscience of a closeted sexist white Jewish president that was now given free rein. It had an extraordinary effect on releasing and unbridling the open sexism that now had the sanction of the prophet of the Lord from a priesthood session where I think you quote, ideally you quote from. So leadership matters a lot, both in terms of positive movement as well as negative. And then the second question I had was, I love your idea of rethinking the kinds of missionary assignments we can come up with. But at the same time, I would also say, fitting and calling individual missionaries to be different kind of options like the nursing home mission. I know a lot of young men who have the ideal temperament for that sort of mission and not proselyte.
And
a lot of women who have the temperament to be very powerful and energetic proselyte.
Yes, that's true.
But not in a nursing home.
Yeah, and maybe the answer is to say, which would you like?
And gender doesn't matter. We're going to look at who you are as an individual.
Yeah, and maybe that's the answer, because I think you bring up an excellent point. I had companions that were, I had a companion right on the street, right in the driveway. She said, I bear testimony to you in the name of Jesus Christ that this book is true. And I thought, my gosh, this is so embarrassing. And, it was very powerful, though. It was very powerful. And she really doesn't belong in a nursing home. she really did well knocking on doors. And I think that's an excellent point. Yeah.
So, yes, there might be group differences, mm-hmm. but at the same time, every individual member of those groups has their own temperament,
yep.
their own gifts, their own strengths, and their own
needs. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, Mike. Yeah. Did you have a question over here? Aaron? No. It's all right if you don't want to.
I think that I've had a lot of good thoughts. Go ahead.
Okay, that's okay.
Thank you.